It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Glad you're here today. Today, we have an interesting conversation coming up with a guy that's a Chicago-based guy, used to do some trading at the Chicago Board of Trade. Let me read you his bio because it's really interesting. He founded Artac Advisory in 1996 after a decade on the Chicago Board of Trade, where he provided technical market analysis to Chicago's traders and brokerage firms. His expertise spans U.S. stocks indexes, treasury instruments, and agricultural commodities. And lately, he's been increasingly focused on large-scale commodity producers, offering advice to grain, livestock, energy sectors across North America. In 2021, Carrie and his daughter Madeline launched wickedstocks.com, an online advisory service applying Carrie's extensive commodity analysis to the stock market. Wicked Stocks' mission is to provide directional clarity for the active stock trader and investor. Let's welcome Carrie Artac. Carrie, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Mark. I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on the show.
It's great to see you, and I always like to meet people that have been in the trenches and now are trying to educate people, especially with their daughter. I can't wait to hear about that. But why don't you take us back through, you know, how you got started in this business and maybe some of the cool stories that you might have learned when you were on the Board of Trade in Chicago.
Sure. Well, you know, I actually started in 86 as a kind of a floor clerk at the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, okay. Where I learned, you know, puts and calls and spread strategies. I was working for a very successful OEX trader. That's the S&P 100. And, learned a lot of, information and trading strategies from him. And I was working toward trading. I was about a year and a half into my apprenticeship when we had the stock market crash of 87. And if anybody was down there at the time, you know, it really sort of decimated for several years the options markets. Volatility, volume dried up. A lot of the traders left the floor. As a young newbie, I was kind of left floundering. So I went across the street to the Chicago Board of Trade, where I offered my sort of, you know, early education in options to a 30-year treasury bond futures trading firm. And at that time, the 30-year treasury bond pit was the largest in the world. They don't exist anymore. And so they brought me on board to show them a few things about options trading. They knew the futures markets well. And in fact, they had what they termed the war room, a number of analysts who were closely monitoring, you know, intraday bar charts, 5, 15, 30-minute bar charts, moving averages, stochastics, RSI, volume analysis. And, I took a real keen interest in this because I had never actually studied the underlying market. I had studied option strategy and how to trade spreads, butterflies, ratios, call spreads, that sort of thing. But this was all very new to me. And I started just burning a lot of midnight oil, pouring through lots of books. John Murphy, one of his classic, you know, technical analysis books, I probably read 5 times over the course of 6 months. And on the trading floor, they had a, pretty advanced computerized system for its day that was a free use to any floor members. It was called Commodity Quote Graphics, CQG, which I use actually to this day. Wow. And they just had a full panorama of the very same studies that I was pouring myself into with the books that I was reading. And I latched on to several that really sort of resonated with me, made sense to me, really classic formations like channels, speed lines, Fibonacci retracement levels. And then I had to determine which were primary, which were secondary in my analysis. And so I began to sort of offer my opinion to the traders in the trading group that I was with in the 30-year treasury bond pit. There's about 20 of them. It was a family-run operation, a big brother with little brothers, and we had clerks and so forth. And they started taking interest in what I had to say because some of what I was saying was actually panning out and was oftentimes contrary to what the war room was dishing out. So, within about a year, I became one of the primary technicians. I was trading my own account at the time, but, you know, I had to really sort of decide whether I was going to trade or analyze the markets. And analysis for me has always been something that is as a passion of mine. I still trade. I call it trade investing in the futures markets. I allocate a very small portion. I'm very risk averse. And that has actually worked for me over the years. But what had happened is this group actually folded after a few years. The owner left the trading floor, went off and bought a bunch of land in Florida. I think he lives there to this day. And so he retired. And we had to sort of flounder as a group. You know, all of us had to determine what we were going to do. At that time, I had kind of a small reputation growing in the 30-year bond treasury pit as being, you know, a pretty decent analyst. And so I had, you know, well-heeled traders who were coming up to me and offering me, you know, decent money to provide them intraday analysis. I was looking at 30 and 60-minute bar charts and providing buy signals, sell signals, area that you can buy on support, sell on resistance. And so that flowered into what has become Artak Advisory Incorporated, which I started in 1996. And that is, you know, now the trading floors are gone. I still have hedge funds and brokerage firms that subscribe to my service, marketing services in the grain industry. But my growing audience and probably the lion's share of my subscribership in the commodity side are what I would call large-scale commodity producers, grain-growing operations in the breadbasket of the United States, cattle ranching concerns primarily west of the Mississippi, and even crude oil refiners in the South and Southwest. And so they subscribe. It's a subscription-based service. It's another thing I really learned early on was providing just a flat fee analysis rather than being a broker who's commission-based. You know, the commission-based broker always has an incentive to just come up with something, conjure up some sort of a trade, even when the best thing to do is just sort of sit on your hands and let the market tell you what to do. So that was sort of the germination of Artak Advisory. And I've been doing it for a long time. I think I told you earlier, I'm a nationally syndicated radio show on Monday afternoons, and I've been doing that for 7 years. And as my daughter, who's now 28, Madeline, was coming out of college about 4 or 5 years ago, she said, "Dad, why don't you start doing you know, stock market analysis like you've been doing commodity analysis?" Because, you know, the same methods apply, and I've used them for years in my own portfolio. And I thought, you know, she had nothing going. It was in the middle of COVID. And I said, you know, I kind of quipped, "Maddie, you build the website, I'll provide the analysis." And she said, "Okay." So about a month later, she came back with this basic website. And that was really the beginning of what she termed Wicked Stocks. Since then, her little brother has joined us. He's got a math degree from Colorado State. It's the three of us that work together. And, you know, we provide a couple of stock picks a week. I do daily Triple Q, daily SPY analysis. You know, Triple Q is the NASDAQ 100 ETF and the SPY is the S&P 500 ETF. So we do that daily analysis in video screen sharing format. We also have a YouTube channel, Wicked Stocks, where we offer free daily analysis in NVIDIA and Tesla. And that is kind of, you know, we want to introduce the world to the work that we do. And obviously the incentive for us is that they then climb over to wickedstocks.com and become regular monthly subscribers. But yeah, applying the same methods that I've used for years in the stock market that I've been using in the commodity market. My kids, you know, they do everything from the marketing to the web development to the post editing and the videos. And I basically focus on the analysis. My son helps me a lot with the chart analysis. So he gets out ahead of me and he combs through hundreds of typically mid to large cap stocks, many of them household names, many of them AI now, where we're looking for buy signals that people can jump into. We're always looking for about a 20% move minimum on the moves that we're looking for. They're typically 3 to 5 weeks, AI out to 3 to 5 months. You're more sort of a solid large cap stock. So, but you know, I think that kind of summarizes that I sort of sped forward in terms of what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack in there. And there's some things that I want to leave alone because frankly, they're maybe above my pay grade or certainly, you know, may not be as interesting as they are to you and me for the listeners and viewers. But I want to I want to just tell you a quick story. You reminded me of something that happened to me when I was in Chicago in 1986. I was on this motorhome trip with a couple of buddies and I was getting ready to graduate college. And I stopped in Chicago and I've always been in the market since I was about 12. And somebody grabbed the three of us off the street and said, "Hey, you guys want to be on TV?" And I said, "Well, what for?" And of course, I said, "Sure," because I was a 20-year-old kid that was like, "Yeah, who doesn't want to be on TV?" And I got picked to ask a question on this show called Ira Epstein's Stocks, Options, and Futures. So,
oh, right. Yeah.
I thought I was the, like, you know, going to be famous. And, you know, anyway, that was my beginning entry to being on TV and being in Chicago and being in that whole financial world. And it was really,
that's a name I haven't heard in a long time, but it does bring back memories. Yeah.
I was wondering if that was the guy that you had done some work for, but you said you did.
No, there were hundreds of guys like the guy that I worked for. You know, most of them like to remain anonymous, you know, they just like to quietly make their money and then keep, and then move on, you know. And that all sort of vanished by the early 2000s. Everything went electronic. And in fact, you know, with the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, it dried up for several years after the crash of 87. And it wasn't until the early 90s that it really began to revive. And when it did revive, it was increasingly dominated by the big banks, the Citigroups and Goldman Sachs. It wasn't really any longer the local market makers who were doing well. In fact, they were having a tough time as all those spreads narrowed and became very tight. And so it became a big numbers game, large volume, just grabbing micro ticks. And then you had, you know, the high frequency trading that kicked in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that kind of ruined it for a lot of those local pit traders. And so I had to then decide, you know, what was I going to do? Because my business began to dry up just a bit. And that's when I began to approach the farmers and the ranchers, because I was doing live cattle, soybeans, corn, wheat, you know, for the brokerage firms and the pit traders. And as it turns out, many of them began, especially as their sons began to take over the family farms and the ranching operations, and they're now in their 20s and 30s. They may have even had a agri-finance degree from Des Moines, where they spent a semester doing technical analysis. And so they began to appreciate what technical analysis could predict longer term. And so that's exactly what I do. I'm all technical analysis. Many of the farmers that I work with and ranchers, they're very fundamentally oriented. They understand trade tariffs and weather patterns and inventories. But what they don't have an eye for necessarily are, say, a six-year descending channel that's been dominating a bear trend for the last, you know, half decade. And the fact that we might close above that channel top at the end of a week does shift the technical focus. The fundamentals may still be unchanged, but the technicals are giving an early lead on a long-term move. And those are the kinds of things that I look for now in the stock market as well.
As you know, because you're a Tesla guy and so am I, you know that the stock sometimes, and the stock and the fundamentals are often decoupled from the stock price. And
very much so.
Got a company in Tesla over the last 4 years that has increased as a going concern markedly, but the stock is roughly still the same as it was 3-4 years ago. And you know, I wonder what your technical analysis would say about the future of Tesla, because mine is certainly saying that that the fundamentals are going to start to catch up with the stock price.
You know, I have had strong long-term buy and sell signals in Tesla over the last few years, but presently I'm kind of in this two-sided framework through October, and I'm letting the market dictate where it's going to tip its hand, you know. So like right now above 250, I'm bullish all the way to 320. And if we break 195, I'm bearish all the way down to about 130. So right now it's kind of a 195 buying it to 250 selling it. And that's may actually what may play out, you know, through the month of October. We shall see, right?
Exactly. We will see there. By the way, everybody, not sure when this is coming out, but in October, October 10th, Tesla is having their big robo-taxi reveal. They might drop another couple of models, modifications, things like that on the fundamental side. But
hey, it's Mark Yeagy here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2-4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2-4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
I just want to throw in, as you say that, just because this happens a lot where I'm on a pod, not a podcast or the radio, and I'll mention levels, but my levels change daily typically. So that 195 is a rising channel bottom that'll probably be at 210 by the time this comes out. And that 250 that I mentioned is a rising channel top that'll probably be at 270 by the time this show. So I just wanted to make that point.
Well, it kind of goes to, you know, a lot of people, and I'm a technical guy too, but I also shadow it with fundamentals. And it's 80-20 before I get into a stock, fundamentals to technicals, and then the ratios flip after I'm in a stock. But a lot of people say technical analysis, which is basically charting everybody. The technical analysis is voodoo for you know, grownups. And, you know, there could be an element of that, especially when you start talking about Fibonacci lines and you know, other things like that. But there's a lot of truth and there's a lot of psychology that plays into stock charting. And people get to resistance lines and almost en masse, they sell. And people get to support lines and almost en masse, they buy. And the same thing happens at Fibonacci levels and certain moving averages, et cetera. So it's kind of a
Some of them are self-fulfilling. I think there's a lot of Fibonacci enthusiasts out there.
Sure.
And so I know the 5/8 Fibonacci pullback, whether it's to the downside over the course of 3 weeks in Tesla or even 3 or 5 days to the upside, the 5/8 has worked quite well and still does. Now, I like to combine those. My Fibonacci are more of a secondary element. I like to combine them with channel structures and other things that are sort of coming together at a single point. I think one of the unique things I do as well is I look at the big picture, the long-term charts going back several years. Those have their own structures. And when those structures line up with kind of the near-term daily chart formations, you can have a rising channel top that is now intersecting with a long-term trend line that's coming down off a series of highs over the last few years. And when that all comes together, I'm much more confident offering it as an area to sell into for those who may have already owned Tesla or looking to sell Tesla.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a neat thing. I want to hear a little bit more about how you got a family business now and you help primarily millennials, or that's kind of, you know, you have a couple of millennials, it seems like, that are educating, kind of help people like that. I'm sure it's everybody, but let's talk a little bit about that. Tell me what you got going on there.
Well, that was the original intent. You know, when my daughter mentioned, Dad, let's start a stock advisory service, you know, we're right smack dab in the middle of COVID. And she was, you know, and during COVID, as you're well aware, there were a lot of people staying at home attempting to make a few bucks trading the stock market in their own account. And she had mentioned that many of her peers, you know, 20-somethings, were having a go at it. And she was, you know, mentioning we should offer our services as a support for some of the people that I know, millions of them probably out in the marketplace in their 20s who need a helping hand. So that was the original intent. But as the Wicked Stocks began to gain traction, and we've been doing it for almost 4 years now. So by year number two, we started doing surveys and finding out who are our clientele and what are the demographic. And what is true is while we have a lot of 20, 30 somethings, our average client is a mid-40s male who's typically a professional of some sort or has a lot of trading experience, one or the other. They're either looking to invest or trade. But yes, I think that's still one of the key attributes, I think, of Wicked Stocks is that we have an eye and an ear for the newbie beginners who need to understand, you know, for instance, risk management is the key, especially in the futures market where you're highly leveraged, but even in the stock market, and especially in these highly volatile stocks like Tesla, like Nvidia, where you can rally or drop 5 or 10% in a single day. So having a risk management approach is critical. You know, I never risk more than 2% of my trading capital or my portfolio on any particular stock endeavor. That's a rule of mine. So one of the ways I maintain that is I never allocate more than 10% of my portfolio to any particular stock. No matter how bullish I might be on that particular stock, I'll allocate 10% of it. And I typically have about 10, 12, sometimes 8 stocks, but I like to keep it right around 10. I'm a very discretionary trader and investor. And so for me, being able to wrap my brain around 10 stocks is a lot easier than 20 or 30. And so, you know, if a stock represents 10% of your portfolio, and it drops 10% in a day, that's really only 1% of your overall portfolio. So you can manage your risk much better than that. And I try to advise the millennials and I hate to call them millennials, but the younger new beginning traders. And some of the younger new beginning traders are in their 40s and 50s. You know, that they probably should, that risk management is really the crux to good trading. That's an adage I've used for years. You've got three elements to good trading or investing, and that is risk management, a market analysis, whether it's technical or fundamental, and trading psychology. And I think the core for a good trading program is having a good risk management approach that's relatively mechanical and thoughtless and habituated and disciplined, and you just adhere to it. And if you can take care of that, you're 80% of the way there. You don't have to be hitting home runs. You let your winners ride out. And there's a whole methodology to that, of course, trade execution, risk management, that doesn't have to be too elaborate or sophisticated. You just put your stop losses in and keep them there. And then maybe once in a while you raise them if the market continues to move in your direction.
But never lower them, right, Kerry? Never lower them.
That's right. You never lower your stop loss. Yeah. Never second guess that, you know, because what happens is, you go from near-term trading to investing, you know, as you're locked into a losing position. Yeah. And there's nothing worse for the trading psychology. Being in a losing position just sort of creates the sort of immobilized paralysis where you're just hoping and praying and you're miserable, and it completely throws off. And I've been there a few times, not in recent years, but I do remember it well. They are wounds that are learning lessons. And if we can help others who are now coming into the market and trying to trade their own portfolios, their own retirement accounts, their own trading accounts, if we can help them avoid some of those mistakes by really sort of emphasizing the value and the importance of risk management, we think we're doing our job.
Yeah, absolutely true. I always tell my students that trading psychology is 90%, mindset is 90% of trading. And part of that is having a solid risk management plan, which means you have to have a good solid trading plan. And you have to make it so right. That you write the trading plan on a Sunday night when the market's not open and you're not emotional. And then you got to stick to your rules, and easier said than done, as you and I both know, right?
That's absolutely true. But, you know, the risk management will keep the psychology balanced, you know.
Exactly right.
And there's also planning your trade and trading your plan. These are cliches, but they are valuable and they work.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, quick question. I've heard the 2% rule on a lot of portfolio management. How do you actually end up making money if you, on a $100,000 account, you only invest $2,000? Am I missing something there?
Well, I would invest probably $10,000. Like I said, I like to break it into about 10 different stocks. And okay. So if I've got $100,000, I'll look for my first stock pick. You know, if they're a subscriber to wickedstocks.com, for instance, we dish out a couple a week. Maybe they jump on one of those and then they just begin to add to it. And within the course of several months, maybe they now have 10 stocks. Maybe several of them have stopped out. So I would go more like it would probably, if you had a $100,000 account, it'd be more in the area of about $10,000 per investment. And not all of those are going to play out and win, but you're right. If you're risking 2%, you're allowing that particular stock to drop 20%.
Got it.
And so I call the 2% stop out, the worst case scenario. This is like, sure. You know, that's where all, stop. You know what? Yeah, exactly. The black swan events, or when all, you know what, hits the fan, which can happen several times a year. But for the most part, if you just sort of do the simple math, typically I don't see the stock having to drop more than 5 or 10% before it no longer looks good to me. And by that math alone, that's about 0.5% to 1% of my total trading capital. And very often, you know, as these buy signals set up, and they are classic, I love the channel setup, you know, where the market holds within a series of, kind of a parallel series of highs and lows, and then we break out to the upside. All of our channel formations are very specifically created. And so when we settle above them at the end of a day or at the end of a week, oftentimes, these are the same formations that many institutions are following as well. And they just set off an immediate response, not always, but oftentimes an immediate response. So very oftentimes on the signals that we offer, you're already up 2 or 4% on that particular stock. You can raise. I have another rule that I like to emphasize, which is to say that if I do put in a 2% stop loss on a particular trade that represents my entire trading capital, and if the stock then rallies that amount, In other words, if it rallies 2% and actually adds 2% to my trading account, I then raise my stop loss to break even, because that is another method for preserving trading psychology. There's nothing worse for trading psychology than to be in a winning trade and that's, you know, substantially in your favor, to see it cascade south and stop you out at a 2% loss when you knew you had a lot of time at one point in time to at least break even on that endeavor. And so, you know, there is that whole, you know, I will raise the stop to break even. Once the market has rallied an equal amount to the loss that I was willing to occur to begin with. And that's usually on a closed based, but it could be intraday, you know. And so, you know, you don't really have to lose 2%. That's my experience. They're usually less than that. And I'm much more about preserving capital. Staying in the game is important. Those winners will take care of themselves over time. They are a minority of the trade, but there are stocks that will just sort of take off on a sustained, protracted rally, and you're in it. And the question then becomes, where do I get out? We always offer objectives. There's always some sort of a target for, you know, maybe a resting offer above the market, good till canceled, that if it gets hit, now you're out of the trade, or you get out of half the trade, so forth and so on. Scaling in, scaling out is another element of good trading, I think.
Do you ever add to your positions? Is that part of your philosophy, or is it just you get one position and you let it ride, and if it doesn't do what you think it's going to do, you're out?
I will, you know, for instance, if we close above a channel structure and we have a buy signal, and if I don't act on that buy signal, which will happen for various reasons, if the market then the following week falls back to that support level, I will step into it, but not all in. I'll get in maybe half. Yeah. And then if the market begins to rally off of that support level and continue higher in the days and weeks to follow, I will then add to it. But I typically don't add more than the 10% ratio of my total trading capital. That is usually a maximum. You know, if I have a particular stock that represents 30 or 50% of my account, I'm overweighted in that stock, I think. Sure. And so as it swings, it just that once again can disrupt the trading psychology. You're now consumed with that particular stock, and it absorbs an inordinate amount of your time and energy. At least it does for me. And so that's just the way I've been doing it for a long time.
Fantastic. Well, you and I could probably swap stories and philosophies on trading and technical analysis and breakouts and all that stuff. But let's pivot to where people can find out a little bit more about you and Wicked Stocks and what you do and how they could take advantage of helping them make money.
Sure. Thank you. Well, wickedstocks.com, WICKED stocks.com. We offer a 5-day free trial up front. It's you have to go through the payment gateway. But you can cancel in the first 5 days and there's no cost. And there you'll get daily Triple Q, NASDAQ 100 ETF analysis, daily SPY, S&P 500 ETF analysis. You'll get 2 stock picks a week. You'll get all the previous stock picks that we put out as well. We also have this new element on our website on the homepage. If you scroll halfway down, it's called the Wicked Stocks Insider. And that's actually a free element. So if they provide their email address, they don't go through a payment gateway, but they are delivered 1 to 2 free stock picks a month. And if they're reluctant to actually go through the payment gateway to take advantage of that 5D free trial and receive everything, they can at least go to the insider, provide their email address, and they'll be put into kind of a delivery of 1 or 2 stock picks a month. And of course, you know, they might get a little bit of marketing material, but we promise to never load people's inbox with marketing. So it's wickedstocks.com. And they could also, if they want to get a sense of our work, that is a daily, like in the SPY and the Triple Q, they can go to our YouTube channel, Wicked Stocks YouTube, and you'll see daily Tesla and daily NVIDIA analysis. That's actually free, and it is identical to the analysis that we provide every day in the SPY and the Triple Q.
Fantastic. Well, listen, I appreciate it. You are the epitome of what we talk about here, and it's the saying that I have, which I'll finish off with in a second. But I want to thank you for your time and your wisdom and what you do, because the more people that are out there talking about how people can take control of their own finances, the better. So thanks for being with us today, Kerry.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. And all the listeners and viewers, thank you for being with us today as well. And remember what I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next time. Take care.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.